Vogue, session number 12218, reel 1.
Mr. Morris, yeah. Reel 1. Could you tell me where you were born, please?
Yes, in Battersea, London.
What did your father do for a living?
He was a cab driver at the time.
Did you go to school in Battersea?
Yes. Surrey Lane, Battersea. Actually, in Surrey Lane, Battersea, that was the name of the school. It was an high grade London County Council school.
How old were you when you left?
Well, we moved from Battersea to Mitcham, and then my sister passed a scholarship to go to higher grade school at the Battersea Polytechnic, and they found out that being in Mitcham we were outside of the London district, so we had to move back, which my father did do, so that she could carry on going to the school.
But how old were you when you left school?
I was 13. I passed what they call a trade certificate to leave school before I was 14.
Did you get a job when you left?
Yes, I'd already got a job. I was working in the greengrocers at the time.
How did you come to be in the Navy then?
Well, that's rather interesting, because a friend of mine that was at school, we were chums, very chummy together. His mother was a widow, and he'd got one brother in the Navy, and a brother who was a fisherman, and somehow or other he decided to join the training ship Arethusa, which is part of the Salisbury Homes, and having seen him go, I decided I'd like to join. So I found out what was entailed, and they let me go and join, although I wasn't qualified because I got a father and a mother. But anyway, I did join.
What was the attraction of the Navy for you?
No idea, just to be with my friend, that's all. We were very close together, see, together as friends, you know, boys. We used to go into each other's homes as well, you see. Their family knew each other as well, see. So it was just a family affair. Anyway, suddenly sort of struck me that I'd like to go.
When was it that you joined the Navy?
When?
Yes.
In June 1914.
Did you think that there was a war coming?
No, definitely not.
Would you have joined the Navy if you had thought that there was a war coming?
Probably yes, because I was too young really to realise what was what then, you see. I was barely 16. I wasn't 16 then. I was just about... I wasn't 16 until July 1914.
How did they treat you when you joined?
The Navy? Well, I was very good because as I'd been 12 months aboard the Arethusa, I knew quite a lot of seamanship and schooling. They gave us really good schooling when I was in the Arethusa. And when I joined the Navy, I went straight into what they call the advanced class, where you got quite good schooling done in mathematics and logarithms straight away, which was quite good at that time.
What had life been like aboard the Arethusa?
Aboard there?
In the Arethusa.
Hard, very hard. But it was quite pleasant, you know. We took it as it came, but the life was hard.
In what way was it hard?
Eh?
In what way was it hard?
Well, because you've got no parents or anything like that, and you were chased around, you had to do this and do that, you see. And you got up early in the morning, and you scrubbed decks because it was one of the wooden walls, you see, with bare feet, especially in the winter. But anyway, we survived.
Were you ill-treated?
No, oh no, no, not ill-treated, no. You were treated quite well, but being young, I mean, it wasn't like home life at all.
Were you beaten?
Oh no, only if you behave yourself. Smoking. Caught smoking, then you got a real beating.
Did you get beaten yourself?
No, I never smoked. I didn't like the idea of the beating. But anyway, smoking didn't attract me.
How did the boys get on with each other at the Arethusa?
Oh, quite good. You know, a very friendly atmosphere altogether, really, because most of them were orphans and probably in better circumstances than they were at home. Whereas in my case, I'd left a quite a good home. See, my father had his own... do you remember the two-wheeled cabs? You ever seen the pictures of them?
Yes.
Well, he had his own awesome cab, you see. So it was fairly... It was rather surprising. I was allowed to go to the Arethusa, but apparently they did. Anyway.
And so was that in 1913 that you joined the Arethusa?
Yes, would be, yes, 1913, yes.
Where were you? Where did you have your initial training in the Navy?
The where?
In the Royal Navy.
Shotley, HMS Ganges at Shotley.
How did life there compare with the Arethusa?
Oh, quite different altogether, because you're in barracks then, you see, and a different type of life altogether, because you had to do more for yourself then than you did in the Arethusa.
Which did you prefer, the Arethusa or Shotley?
Well, I should think probably Shotley, because I got paid there, I got sixpence a day.
You didn't get any money on the Arethusa?
No. No, well, it was a charity, see.
Did war break out whilst you were at Shotley?
Yes. Yes, it broke out on August the 4th, which was about 2 months after I joined.
What do you remember about learning that war was declared?
Well, one of the first things that they'd done, they took a lot from Shotley, so they were short of rifles, and they took most of the rifles that we used to train with there, because we used to have to do musketry drill, and they went to the front. And shortly after the war, there were two ships sunk off the east coast, three ships, the Cressy Oak and the Buca. They were torpedoed, and we attended to some of the funerals of these people. That was all, well, I forget exactly, but towards the end of 14, you know, probably November. So we were struck with the war straight away, more or less, then.
How did you all react at Shotley to the news that we were at war with Germany?
I don't think we realised it. We were too young, really, to take note of anything like that.
Were you excited?
Oh, yeah, I'm bound to be excited.
Were you worried?
No, I don't think I was worried. No, I don't think I was worried at all.
Which branch were you trained in?
Seaman.
Is that what you wanted?
Yes, well, that suited me. My friend, he went in for signals, actually. And that's when we parted, you see. And as I say, we were in advanced class, and we went to sea quicker than most people. And I think I went to sea early in 15.
Which ship did you go to?
HMS Marlborough.
Can you tell me what where did you join the ship?
Where?
Yes.
In Scapa.
How did you get up there?
Well, we took a train from Harwich. I think we went to Portsmouth from Harwich, then from Portsmouth right up to, I have an idea, it was Peter Ed, I'm not quite sure about that. Then we took a transport, the King Ori, to Scapa. There was a detachment, quite a lot of people going. And I joined the HMS Marlborough then.
How many of you were there on the journey? A lot of you?
Oh yes, it was train full, actually. Yes, I always remember that we went through London without stopping anywhere. We went through that cutting they got through at Old Court Way, you know, the way to get through London, even back far at that time.
What was the journey like?
For me, bad, because I'd been... I'd been stung on the eye with a gnat or a wasp or something. And by the time I got the ship, I couldn't see out of either eyes. So I was taken straight to the sick bay, and this was lanced. And they said, rather lucky I got up there, because it could have been erysipelas at the time. It'd been much longer. They couldn't do anything on the train. It done me a good turn, because when I joined the mess with all the other boys, they thought I'd been a boxer and got my eyes filled in.
Can you describe joining the Marlborough?
Yes, as I say, well, I went straight down to the sick bay, and I was down there for about a week. Then after that, I went back in them. They have a separate compartment for boys, so that you mess on your own, about five messes of boys, and join them, and got settled down there. And you had a petty officer to look after you and made sure you'd done the right things and didn't do the wrong. It was a very hard life then, because the ship was a coal ship, and even if you didn't go to sea, you had to coal once a week, which, believe me, was hard work, because as a boy, as soon as you get down in the collier, you hold the bags up, and they fill the bags up with coal. And all you had to be careful about is eating skinned knuckles.
Were you able to do the work?
Oh yes, I was fairly strong that way. I've always been fairly strong.
Can you describe what life aboard the Marlborough was like in 1915?
Well, it was fairly hard, because you used to have to get up at 6 in the morning, you see. Then you'd have, they'd probably have ads of cocoa and wash. You'd get up, have a cup of cocoa and wash, dress, and up past 6 you'd fall in, and then scrub decks, clean ship until breakfast time. And then the same went on the remainder of the day, because you'd done a certain amount of training, a few guns crew, which I was on. You had gun drill, that sort of thing. And of course, if you went to sea, you were actually at action station most of the, not actually at station, but watchful, you know.
Which gun were you on?
I was on P1, which was the foremost one on the port side, 6-inch gun. See. When I first started, I was a sight set of being a young lad. See. Voice pipe, you manned the voice pipe and got orders through that. And done sight setter. And then after a time, we had a younger fellow came along, see, and I stepped up to an ammunition number.
What did that involve?
Eh?
What did that involve?
Well, that meant that you loaded either, in my case, the cordite, see. So you, on those guns, you had a crew there of 9 men, and they all apportioned out to the jobs, you see. And there was the number of 5, 6, 7, and 8 were what they call load numbers. Two, the biggest ones, would load the projectiles, which were 100 pounds, you see, and the other two would load the cordite, you know, the charges.
How were you treated on board ship?
Oh, quite good, really. Strict. Mind the discipline was strict in those days, very strict. And again, no smoking there, you see. If you got into trouble with smoke, because you weren't allowed to smoke till you were 18. I don't know where they are now, but then no smoking until you were 18. See, you were a boy till you were 18. Seems strange, but still true.
Were you happy aboard the Marlborough?
Oh, I think so, yes, because I picked up with people that lived fairly near to me, that, you know, a joiner of about the same age, and we got on quite well together. We were lucky enough to go on leave together, and we used to see each other on leave at the time, so as to enjoy life that way.
Did the cramped conditions that you were living in worry Crowded? You? Did the cramped conditions worry you?
Not really, no. I accepted it. Took things. I'm one of those people that take things as they go, you see. Didn't worry me too much at all.
And the food? Were you happy with the food?
Well, I suppose so, yes. It must have been. It's clean. Probably not enough at times, and not very luxurious, but because in those days, when you had a mess, you have two hands detailed as what are they called, cooks of mess, you see.
Yeah.
Right. Well, then, at certain times during the day, before meals, that they used to sound off cooks of the galley, and the two cooks would go down to the mess, lay the mess table out, then go to the galley and get the food and proportion it out to how many there were in the mess, usually about 12, 14, or probably 16 in a mess. See, and then when they were finished, they would have to dish up, wash up, and put everything away. And that's the sort of thing that you took usually for 2 days, and that was quite enough. Then it goes round, that's it.
Were there many ships at Scarpa when you went?
Oh yes, so there was four battle squadrons. See, and then there were various destroyers and submarines. I wouldn't like to say how many were, but quite a number of it. See, there was eight in. See, I was in the first battle squadron. Our admiral was the next to Jellicoe. When Jellicoe went, our admiral was Sir Cecil Burney. He took over the fleet, you see, and we had eight in our squadron. Then there was eight in the others. There was four battle squadrons before us. There were two battleships. See. Then after that, I think the fifth battle squadron came up. The Valiant Barham and several others.
Was there much rivalry between the different battle squadrons?
Oh, always is, especially when you talk about coal ship. If you've been to fleet, a bit to sea, they usually used to call it what they call an evolution coal ship, and you start at the same time and see who got in most coal and when you finished.
Was there much difference between the different battle squadrons in the quality of gunnery?
Oh, I should think they're more or less the same. The latter ones may have had more modern technical rangefinder and that sort of thing, because there was no such thing as radar in those days. It was all rangefinder. Each turret had a, if it were in the back, had a rangefinder, and then also you had the master rangefinder, which conveyed all their stuff to the control top, which controlled all the firing, you see. And they from there they would set the dials for the different ranges for the guns, you see. But that's all it was, all rangefinder, no such thing as. And of course, allowing for the wind and anemometer for allowing for the wind for deflection, you see. It's quite a lot of things. Most ships used to have what they call a Captain Dreyer's gunnery table, which all, a lot of the technical details were fed into that used to assist in gun control, you see.
Do you think that the Marlborough was an efficient ship?
Efficient? Oh, I think so, yes. I think very efficient. In fact, our commander was a very efficient
man,
because he'd stop you and he'd ask you different things. And one thing you had to carry a knife, because a lot of life was lost through Carley floats, which were those portable things that were put down and were lashed down and were never able to cut the ropes away to free them. And he always used to say, a knife will save a life.
Did people obey him?
Eh?
Did people obey him?
Oh, yes.
What was his name?
Hugh Schomburg Curry. I think it was a Scotsman, actually, Curry. I know that name because every punishment by anybody who was punished by warrant, he used to sign it, and it was always signed Hugh Schomburg Curry. So it's a name that stuck for a long, long time.
What did people think of Curry?
Well, I think it was, like everybody else, they respected him. He was a good technician, good man. Any officer who's good at his work is always respected, I think. I've often found that they're all right through the Navy.
Were there people amongst the officers whom the crew didn't like?
No, I don't think so. Not that I know of, anyway. But they all seemed quite good to me.
What did people in Scapa feel about the admirals at the time, like Jellicoe and Beatty?
Oh, I think they thought that Jellicoe was a good, steady, reliable, whereas Beatty was the dashing, you know, go for it sort of chap. At first and argue afterwards sort of business, you know.
Who do you think they preferred?
Eh?
Which of the two do you think they preferred?
Well, I think age depended a lot. If he was elderly, you depended on the steady, reliable one. If he was young, you joined up with him.
So
I think they were, Peter was well liked that way, you know.
Who did you prefer?
I don't think I studied, actually. I was quite happy where I was, and I didn't worry. Because there were two different fleets. You see, Beatty was, he was stationed at Rosyth with the battle cruisers, whereas Jellicoe was in Scapa with the Grand Fleet, you see.
Were you proud to be in the Navy?
Oh, I think so, yes.
Were you proud of the Marlborough?
Oh, I think she was a good ship, yes. I was happy aboard there, very happy.
What about being stationed at Scapa? Did that suit you?
Well, you got used to it after a time. It was, you realised that you were war and you've got to be somewhere. And we were allowed ashore to play football and things like that, you see. But otherwise, there was nothing much in Scapa itself. But then, I mean, while you was laying in there, you got different things to do. And I suppose life just went on like that.
So you weren't bored stiff?
Oh, I wasn't anyway. I always found enough to do. But then I think I've got a temperament that takes things as they come, you see.
Did you feel much in danger of submarines penetrating into Scapa?
No, not in those days. Well, of course, none did, actually, because they used to have barricades at the entrance of them this time. Before you went out, they'd open the gates, you see, and close them when you come in. Whereas during the last war, they had magnetic control then, didn't they? Except in the one entrance where the submarine got in to do the Royal Oak.
So you felt secure in that?
Oh, I think so, yes. I don't think anybody thought any other difference.
How did you view the prospect of fighting the German fleet?
Like everybody else, I think, let's wallop them, get the chance of walloping them. I think that's what everybody thought. I don't know why it should be, but...
So you thought the Royal Navy was superior?
Oh, I think so, yes. I think everybody thought that. Whether they were or not is a different thing.
What was the first time that Marlborough went out when you were with her from Scapa?
Oh, probably a couple of days after I joined her. They used to go out fairly regularly. Not all the ships at the same time, but different times. Oh yes, we often went out. And we were out, at the time of the Jutland, we were out quite a long time. We knew that something was in the offing then. They had an idea.
Was Jutland the first time you were in action?
Yes.
Can we go on to Jutland? And can you... You said that you had an inkling that something was in the air. What made you think that?
Well, the day it happened, in the morning, there was a feeling somewhere that things were happening, because in those days we had no wireless or telephone or anything like that. The only was only wireless from ship to ship. But there was a feeling in the air somehow that there was something happening. Then in the afternoon we found out that it was actually happening.
How did you find that out?
Well, I suppose we started to prepare for going to battle then, getting everything ready, because you've got to use flash screens and all that sort of for the guns. In each case, we used to have a screen to see what they call flash. Because previously, different times, they had different accidents. See, cordite we used to have in empty bags, then they put them in flash-proof cases. And then each casemate, which were open, they put a screen down so as to prevent any danger from going. Well, all those sort of things, getting prepared, so we knew. Then we heard, later in the afternoon, we heard firing. Then, of course, we went to action stations.
What was the call to go to action stations? Can you remember the call to go to action stations?
Oh, it's a bugle call.
Can you remember how it goes?
No.
When the bugle call went, did you realise it was the real thing?
Oh yes, we had a very good idea. It was.
You weren't in any doubt that it was the real thing.
No, not the slightest. Because we had we'd sneaked up on the forecastle, and we could hear them in the distance going, so we knew it was going to be a real thing.
Who had sneaked up onto the forecastle?
Eh?
Who was it who went up onto the forecastle?
Me and a couple of other chaps, you youngsters, you know. We shouldn't have been doing it, but still we did. Wondering what it was all about, you know, curiosity, more than anything else.
What could you hear?
Just the boom in the distance, the boom of the gun.
Were you frightened?
No, I don't think so.
Were you frightened when the call to action stations came?
No, excited, wondering what was going to happen.
What were you doing when the call came to action stations?
Well, I've no idea. Probably doing all sorts of things. You do board the ship, cleaning this and cleaning that. Or might have been drilling, but I think we were all standing, might have been watch keeping or standing by it. Off watch, because with the guns crew, we used to do what they call a submarine watch on the smaller guns. But we might have been on that, or take it. We were stand by to go on watch again.
Can you remember running to action stations?
Going to action?
Can you remember it? Did it all go smoothly?
No, I don't think I did. I think we all got there. I don't think there was any rush to it. Well, when we got to action stations, we realised that the guns crew, which we were on the non-fighting side. The enemy was on the starboard side and we were on the port side. So all we do was to wait and listen to hear when the guns started firing, you see. And of course we used to get some of it because the noise used to come down the voice pipe to the outside cellar, that he used to hear some of the orders coming through because all the voice pipes were sort of interconnected. But and then of course when they started firing, the big guns started first, the turrets, and then we realised that